Good afternoon. This is Yannikin Smucker, one of the co-editors at the Oral History Review. And joining me today for our latest edition of OHR Conversations is Yolanda Hester. She's an oral and a public historian based in the Washington, D.C. area who does some work with UCLA. And she's going to tell us today about the project Community and Commerce, Oral Histories of African American Businesses in Los Angeles. Thank you so much for joining me today, Yolanda.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
We, of course, are both working in our home offices, as we all do here in, I guess it's now May of 2020. It's very hard to keep track. But I'm delighted to have you join me virtually and chat about this project, which I found really great to explore, really great contribution to African American, great migration history, and love how it comes up to the contemporary day as well. So can I start by asking you to just describe the project and your involvement with it?
Sure. So Community and Commerce originated as an oral history series for the Center for Oral History Research, which is at UCLA. And at that time, a couple years ago, when I got involved with the project, I was doing research on culturally designated neighborhoods, mostly in Los Angeles, but I was looking at culturally designated neighborhoods across the country, such as Little Tokyo and Koreatown and Little Ethiopia and what have you. LA has quite a fair bit of designated neighborhoods. And I was looking at Lemoore Park, which is an African-American neighborhood in Los Angeles, and their attempts over the years to become culturally designated. But the major energy behind a designated neighborhood is the commercial district. And I became very interested in the commercial district and businesses and this interplay between the community and businesses and culture. And so when I was already involved with the Center for Oral History Research, and they asked me to propose a series, what I proposed was a series of oral histories on long-term African-American businesses in Los Angeles. And so that's how this series started. We ended up with about 19 narrators, mostly in the sort of South Los Angeles area and the Pasadena area, with some businesses that are located outside of those areas. And part of our requirements for our criteria for the businesses and the business owners is that the business had been open for at least 25 years or more. And we ended up with about 50% of the businesses that we interviewed being open for at least 50 years, and about half the businesses were multi-generational. The businesses had to still be active. So we wanted to sort of get that personal story from a business that's still running and still active and still involved with the community and still solving problems. Also, we wanted to make sure that we represented a variety of industries. So in this particular series, there are about 9 industries that are represented. So there's real estate and construction and, you know, the food business and the cleaning business. After the series was completed, a few months down the line, Teresa Barnett, who's the head of the Center for Oral History Research, wanted to pilot a digital, like a digital project of this series, and they hired me back to curate it. And so we created, you know, the website of Community and Commerce, which includes clips from the interviews, contextual essays that give a little bit of history about commercial districts, you know, African-American commercial districts in Los Angeles, and also archival photos and photos from some of the narrator's personal collection.
And it's a really great site to explore. I really love all of the historic photos, particularly. That's a love of mine, and it really brings it to life, having those multi-generational photos. So what do you think visitors will learn by their own exploration of the site?
So you know, there's really two sites to visit. There's the full interviews that are part of the Center for Oral History Research website. And then there is the website, which is also, you know, hosted by the Center for Oral History Research, but can be found on the UCLA Library Special Collections site. For people who are visiting the full interviews, the interviews reveal community history, family history, business history, neighborhood history. The way I structured the interviews is that all of the interviews took a sort of three-prong approach. So the first third of every interview really focuses on family and community history. And then the second section of each interview focuses on the moment at when the narrators took on this leap of faith to start a business or either take on a family business. And it really talks about the business history. So how staffing evolved over time, what their startup money was, how they marketed, how things changed, you know, how historical events over time impacted their businesses. And then the third section of the interviews really focus on four areas of change that I thought were interesting and are topics that come up in social science research. So one area of change was policy changes. So how policy changes such as, you know, California changing the minimum wage laws and how that impacted the business. A second area was industry changes, right? So how very industry specific evolutions impacted the business. So for example, you know, in the cleaning business in the late, you know, 1990s into the early 2000s in California, there was a ruling that cleaners had to be green businesses. Mm-hmm. So that meant that the cleaners had to buy all of this new equipment, new chemicals, and it was a huge expense for businesses. And how did they weather that? A third area of change is technological. So these businesses that have been around for 50 years, and we have a couple businesses that are reaching almost, you know, 100 years, you know, they've seen a lot of technological changes, especially in these last sort of 30, 40 years, and just how they weathered those changes and whether they, you know, how they sort of become compliant to them or either they didn't use them. Like there were some businesses that the owner didn't have an email. And then the fourth area of change that we talked about was neighborhood change. So how gentrification and demographic changes, or even the economic status of a neighborhood could impact a business. So if you're listening to the longer interviews, you know, you can touch upon all of those different topics. For people who are going to the website, you know, it gives more of an overview of African-American history, an overview of African-American commercial districts in LA. There are about seven chapters or seven topics that are covered. So you do learn a little bit about secession and the Great Migration and these brief historical overviews. It's a great educational tool for people who need and would like to see photos and, you know, sort of different forms of media talk about the same topic.
So you've talked about these entrepreneurs and business owners who you've interviewed. Can you tell us a little bit about some of the challenges of building those relationships? Any oral historian knows that first step of building rapport, earning trust, all of that is such an integral step in a good oral history project. How did that go for you?
So yes, that's all the early legwork that takes place to get people on board. When I first started this project, the communities I was familiar with, I wasn't familiar with all of the businesses and I didn't know any of the business owners. So in many ways, although I was familiar with the community, I was really starting from scratch with the business owners. And because these were active businesses, people were busy. You know, some of the businesses are smaller, some are larger, but business owners are busy. They're working all the time. So it really took a lot of work to, one, just get in the door and explain the project. And what that meant was, you know, sometimes it was a phone call, but sometimes I had to get out there and just stop by businesses and say hi and introduce myself. And I actually thought that was the most effective way to touch base with the owners of these businesses, just being there. And then over time, just being extremely accommodating and flexible, because they were being incredibly generous to give their time. And like I said, you know, this is an active business. Things were happening. There was one time when I showed up for an interview, and one of the businesses had, it was a catering business, and all the tires had been slashed. And so they had to run off and deal with that, and we couldn't do the interview that day. And so I tried to be as supportive as possible of that business owner. And of course, we rescheduled. You know, just all sorts of things would pop up, and you just have to go with the flow and be very flexible. What was interesting to learn, because we were focusing on two communities and there was some overlap in stories, which I was very interested in, some of the business owners, unbeknownst to me, knew one another. And so that was very helpful to be able to say, you know, hey, I'm interviewing this other person and they know them and they have this wonderful history with them. Sometimes some of the interviewers who were really excited about the project would recommend me to other people. So, you know, I just stayed very open and available to, you know, however their lives worked in that moment. And I think that helped me build a lot of trust with this community.
What has been the relationship between these African American neighborhoods and UCLA?
So, you know, Los Angeles is a very big city. It covers a lot of geography. And the two neighborhoods that I focused on, you know, they're quite far from UCLA. And there's a tendency in UCLA for neighborhoods to be sort of, less interdependent than, say, neighborhoods in other cities. You know, they're more self-supporting. And so there may not ever be a need for someone to travel over to another neighborhood. And so what we did do, we did have a panel discussion at UCLA, and we had an event in Leimert Park in one of the neighborhoods, and we brought together the narrators just to sort of bring people together, familiarize, you know, our UCLA folks with the neighborhood and our folks in the neighborhood with UCLA. And, you know, a couple of the interviewers actually attended UCLA. So for some, it was, you know, it was a place that they were very familiar with, but for others it was a place that they never went to and never had a reason to.
So you were brought back after doing the interviews to develop the digital project. What were some of the aspects of project design, the technical solutions that you encountered? How did you figure out what to do?
So because we knew that the site would be part of the UCLA library website, you know, we had to use specific platforms. And, you know, the first couple of platforms we tried out were limited in ways that, you know, it just didn't work for us. Ultimately, we end up using Google Sites. And from what I understand, we were able to from the feedback that I'm getting, we were able to get more out of Google Sites than, you know, I guess normally happens. We did have some support, you know, we had great IT support from Carolyn Cube, who was the person who did most of the IT stuff at UCLA. But we used Google Sites. You know, they're templates, and so everything had to fit into a template. We just sort of played around and you know, and tweaked and toggled and to see how things could fit the way we wanted it. There were definitely things that we couldn't do. We wanted to have a map, some sort of mapping visual that was interactive, that people could see, you know, where these businesses were located in LA, but that was a little more difficult for us. So, you know, we just had to play around with it. And we ended up with the Google Sites, and it's working so far.
Did it work well for integrating the, you have audio or video both on the site?
We have audio.
Right, so it played well with audio files? That's always...
Yeah, you know, that Oh gosh, that really took a lot of work to figure that out. We thought, well, maybe we should do SoundCloud and some other platform to host the audio. But then, you know, one of the things that we worry about is if anything changes on one site and, you know, we have it on our site and what, you know, what that would be like in the long run. So what we end up doing was downloading a lot of our audio to Google Drive. We created a Google Drive specifically for the project, and we were able to integrate those audio clips via Google Drive into Google Sites.
Well, it's nice to have another accessible option. As someone who builds a lot of digital projects in partnership with archives and in classrooms, and I'm always curious about what the pros and cons are of every tool. So I appreciate that. And the library the library just links out to the Google site at this point. Self-hosted. Mm-hmm. Great. So I know that you're not based in LA currently, but you have another collaboration coming up with the Oral History Center there?
Yeah, so it's a completely different department at UCLA, but there is an Arthur Ashe Learning Center. It's the Arthur Ashe Legacy Fund, which was started by his wife many years ago and has moved to UCLA because he was a student at UCLA. Mm-hmm. And they are conducting a series of oral histories to preserve his history, to share the history of tennis and African Americans in tennis. And I am working with that project as well.
Who are the sorts of people that you'll be interviewing?
Friends of Arthur Ashe, his manager, Donald Dell. There were key moments such as him playing on the Davis Cup team back in the late 60s. So we have a fair number of the teammates will be interviewed. He took a trip to South Africa in, the early 70s. In a way to protest apartheid, and we're interviewing people who were involved in that trip. And so we have childhood friends, quite a number of childhood friends from his days in Richmond. So we have a selection of associates, tennis people, long-term friends, childhood friends. We have a really good, we're interviewing about 40-50 people for this project.
So given that we are all doing this current phase during the pandemic, we're interviewing from home, if we're interviewing at all, or interviewing remotely. Have you started those interviews? Are you planning to interview remotely? Yeah. I think it's a big conversation that's taking place within the oral history community right now. Like, do you do it? Do you wait? What's the best solution? So where have you, what have you figured out?
Yeah, we were in the middle of interviewing. We had done a number of interviews already before the virus was kicked off. And it was, we had to make a decision about how we wanted to move forward. And what we decided in the end is to continue. We had created such a community of people who were supportive of the project, and we wanted to keep the momentum going. And so, we're going to do a number of oral histories via Zoom. And, there are some folks who really want to do a face-to-face interview. So we're just going to wait those ones out. We'll do those down the line. But as many people as we can interview via Zoom who are open to it and are able to do it, that's what we're going to do.
Have you done any of those Zoom interviews yet?
Yeah, I've done a couple interviews. Yes.
Yeah. And, how's it felt compared to...
Overall, a good alternative. That's what I want. That's the best way to describe it. It's been a good alternative, meaning that it's great to be able to see people's faces and expression. Mm-hmm. If they're pausing, you can, you have an idea of what that pause really means, as opposed to doing it, over the phone or some other way. The biggest issues are technical. Different people have different levels of technical savvy. People are using different equipment. The one thing that's been absolutely helpful unbelievably helpful is making sure all of our pre-interviews are done via Zoom.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
You know, it's absolutely helpful. Yeah. So it's a practice. I mean, we're doing lots of interviews, so we kind of have our routine down,
but
it's a great practice for the person that you're interviewing. And also you get to have some control over the environment, you know, so during the pre-interview, if it doesn't look like it's well lit, I can have them move to different rooms of their house. I can test like, oh, is that the dishwasher in the background? Okay, well, let's do it near the kitchen, you know, or what have you. So it gives me an opportunity to test a lot of things out. It also makes me feel a little more confident that when we start the interview, you know, a lot of groundwork has been laid and we figured out a lot of things, and that, you know, we have a little bit of control over how the environment in which the interview is taking place. So that's been key. That has been tremendously helpful to do. Granted, it doesn't solve all problems and things come up, but you know.
Of course. Well, that's useful to hear as so many of us are testing it out. I've got a couple interviews scheduled in the next few weeks myself. I mean, we're doing this over Zoom right now. I'm sure we're all kind of sick of Zoom by this point, but but yeah, it's better than having to abandon ship completely. It's great to hear. Absolutely. Great to hear that you're able to move forward. It sounds like a really interesting project, and it's nice that you can continue to work with another group of scholars at UCLA as well.
Yeah, I'm very thrilled.
Well, I'm really glad that you reached out to tell me about Community and Commerce. It's a really fascinating project. I found a lot of similarities, of course, to the project going north about African Americans and many of their businesses in Philadelphia as well. So I found a lot of commonalities. It's interesting to see across cities how experiences are different and the same. So I think it's a really valuable project. Comparatively, it puts another piece in the puzzle of the larger history of African Americans and business life in the United States. So I really encourage our listeners, our visitors, our viewers to take a look. You'll see the URL for the website and the oral history collections posted along with this video. So please do take a look. And I want to thank Yolanda Hester for joining me today. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you so much. This has been such a pleasure.
As it is for me. Take good care.